December 3rd, 2019. Welcome to Tangerine SDR on TeamSpeak. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been working on some coding, but actually is more related to my forestry profession than radio. So there's a little bit overlap, but it's got me going again in two different languages, so that kind of gets me out of a kind of a stalemate. So that's it for me. Next on the list is Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
User joined your channel.
Hello. Yes. Hope you all survived Thanksgiving. I did barely, but I haven't done terribly much relating to this project. I did get the first batch of magnetometer boards in, but they were the ones I knew were not working, had an error on them. But still, I've been using them to match things up. Otherwise, not a lot accomplished. There are too many other competing familial duties, I guess. But otherwise, I've been thinking a lot about stuff. Like to hear what everyone else has going on. Over.
Okay, next on the list, we have Homan. Go ahead, Homan.
Hey, how are you? This is Homan. I'm here to listen to how the magnetometer project is going. I guess Dave, you just mentioned that there's not much of progress over the past week, I guess. So I'm just going to sit here and then listen to what you guys are up for these days and, in terms of development of magnetometer and other stuff. Other than that, I don't really have anything to report at this moment. Depending on the progress that Dave is making, I'd love to support and provide necessary information for analyzing data from the magnetometer. So that's it. That's it from me. Over.
Very good. And next on the list, we have Mike, AA8K, shown is recording and Mike muted. And we thank Mike for posting the recordings of this to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. And then next on the list, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Things are going fine here in Scranton. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We had a snow day here, which is quite nice. My work on the project so far, I've continued to work on doing some coding for working on doing ray tracing, which is going to help model what these devices are going to see. So I'm working on that. We're supposed to have a science telecon this Thursday. Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. And a number of us are getting ready to go to the American Geophysical Union meeting today. I just saw the pretty much the final draft of the Case Western Reserve poster where they're going to be presenting what their design so far for the low-cost space weather receiver. And I think that's about it on my end for now. W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business, Nathan. And next on the list is Ned, AA7A. Go ahead, Ned.
Oh, good evening. Let me first check. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, very clear.
Okay, there's no feedback here. I'm never sure, and I hate to go through a whole soliloquy and have it go to the bit bucket. I've been sort of busy the last two to three days with a big issue out at our remote site. We had a storm which had blanketed Ohio, apparently, with snow, whistled through here Friday morning, had 100-mile-an-hour winds, and we lost the 200-foot tower out at our remote site, which hosted the microwave backhaul to the site. So the site is dark, and we're working furiously to get it back online. I guess that's the challenge of remote ham radio is that it's remote, and when it breaks, you got to bring a lot of stuff out to some remote place and fix it. So work with the team to replace the tower and get everything going again. But before that all happened, I had quite a bit of success tinkering with various existing software packages. I was experimenting with SDR Angel, running that out at the site, spectacular tool. And what I'm finding is a real challenge to use the software for noise analysis. It's really everything all set up for narrow band signal studies, since the power in any FFT product frequency point is accurate for a signal that has, you know, the bandwidth which is captured by a point in the FFT array. But when you look at wideband noise, you have to look at the aggregate power in a number of frequency cells, and none of the software out there deals with that correctly. So for example, if you were to change the bandwidth of the receiver, you would expect the noise power to change, but it doesn't. And as a systems guy, that doesn't work right. And so I can't use what most software packages display as power in the IF as accurate measurement of noise. So trying to think through a process of actually capturing performance of a receiver at a site using a defendable method. And what that probably will mean is injecting a known signal at a very low level, measuring the signal to noise ratio, or setting the signal to get a specific signal to noise ratio and use that to estimate the power of the noise. I've done that before in other site surveys, and it looks like we'll have to do that. So you can't really believe what the software spits out as being an accurate measure of noise power. So just something keep in mind as we go forward here on measuring performance. We may have to come up with some method to do that more accurately. Anyway, just plugging away at things and really anxious to see the progress on this receiver. Back to Nat.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Tom in 5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave, and good evening to everybody on the group. It's been a busy week. I got the AM broadcast band stop filter designed and captured in the schematic capture tool and sent to Scotty. I appreciate Scotty's help finding the coil craft. They had the inductor values needed to build the filter, and I redesigned the filter to use some slightly smaller inductor values, and then simulated it in SPICE with the inductors we can buy rather than the values the tool wants to use. And that looks pretty good. Scotty gave me some comments on the receiver, and I need to find out if that's the extent of the comments, if there's more comments. And then I have two questions for the whole group later on to discuss and see which approach everybody might like to use. Back to the group.
Well, fine business, Tom, and looks like further discussion. Next on the list is Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Dave, and thanks again for running the show here. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Mike for recording, too. It put these things up online. Anyway, not a lot going on, kind of like with Dave. Halloween, Thanksgiving has absorbed lots of time. And lots of projects, other projects going around here, taking a little bit of precedence. But I did get some time to look at the I/O for the data engine. Looks like we're going to end up having to use the largest FPGA with 500 IOs. So it's going to give our CAD guy nightmares trying to route the 672 pin BGA. So, but you know, that's what we're here for, to give our CAD guy nightmares so we can get good quality board. Anyway, I need to spend a little more time, Tom, on reviewing the receiver and all that. It looks pretty good, but I still need to spend a little bit more time when I get back to you. And maybe you can answer this in the discussion. Did you send me the filter schematics? I think you did, but it's been a pretty hectic week, and I kind of missed that. So, other thing I found out. My business partner told me that the SDR Play is on sale for 30% off. I think it's a Black Friday, but it's a UK-made thing, so it's really not a Black Friday, but it's a holiday thing. So, and I've been looking online to try to find it, and I can't seem to find it here. So I, he said he bought one, so I believe him. He said it was $130, normally $175, something like that. So pretty decent amount off if you're interested in that kind of receiver. So that said, back to you, Dave.
Fine business. I have a short comment. On Friday, I was talking to Phil Harmon on the Open HPSDR group, and he mentioned that they don't have Thanksgiving in Australia, but they do have inherited our Black Friday ideas. So lots of electronic deals there as well. So I guess it's creeping around the world. Anyway, the next on the list is Dan, W4XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, Dave. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Haven't really done a lot. Did get my VM3 board, so I'm gonna haven't really done much with that, but hopefully this week I'll
User joined
be able
channel.
To get it set up and working. Did play around a little bit with our IQ2 radio and Lin HPSDR. I've been off and on with that for the last couple 3 months. And was able to get really good copy on the ARRL code practice a couple weeks ago. Now, that may not be real impressive to most people, but it was done with a 5-foot section of, I think it's 22-gauge wire, hooked up to an SMA connector that we normally use for AM. And the signal was right down in. I mean, there wasn't much of a signal, and it picked it up, and it really came through beautifully. So this is just kind of proves what you can do with an SDR and minimal antenna and some halfway decent software. So anyway, that's kind of the deal from here. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And I did see that Rob jumped in there, so let's give Rob a chance to make some comments. Go ahead, Rob.
I hope you can hear me.
Just fine.
Oh, good. Okay. Sorry. Yes, I've been on vacation in places that have internet back, and pleased to join you. I don't really have a lot to contribute today. We've been to this discussion. I think one thing I wanted to, I don't know if anyone discussed this, the AGU meeting in San Francisco week, hoping to come. There's presentations, discussions around Tangerine or other activities. I'd like to come over, but wondering, is there any calendar agenda for the about all I have?
Well, Rob, you've been breaking up a little bit. It's like a regular every second or so, you will drop out for just a bit. I believe several of the scientists said they were going to the geophysical meeting, so you may find some Tangerine SDR people there. I think Nathan said for sure he was going.
Yeah, that's right, Rob. I will definitely be there. I'm giving a talk on Friday. The Case Western people, David Kasdan and Christina Collins, they have a poster on Thursday. Hyomin, who I believe who is on right now, he's probably going too. He can tell you for sure, but I'm pretty sure he's going. And quite a few of the other scientists are going. There's already been some talk on the listserv. I think we're going to have a ham-side get-together for like drinks on Wednesday evening. I'll firm that up later in the week. It's just been absolutely crazy for me. And we will also... I also try to compile a list of all the presentations that will be happening at AGU through the listserv, through the HAMSCI listserv, and then I post that onto the HAMSCI website. So I'll be working on getting that together as well. But as I said, my schedule is just absolutely crazy. So if you don't see that on the website right away, feel free to ping the HAMSCI listserv and ask again who's going. I know a few people have already sent that information out to the listserv. Back to you.
Well, that brings us to the end of the list, so we're open for general discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, one other thing that I forgot to mention. I did have a chat with Bill Engelke this week as well, actually the day after Thanksgiving. And he's been putting together a project plan, mapping out the next 3 years of the DAISY project, the Personal Space Weather Station project, into the Microsoft project program. So he's been acting as a project manager for that. And so he went over that with me. And that covers a lot, mostly the back-end stuff for the University of Alabama. But he has some of Scotty's work in there as well, and a little bit of the magnetometer stuff. So I'm starting to work with him a little bit on project management.
So, Tom, did you send me the schematics for the filter board?
Yes, I did. Throw away the first one. It's got a bad footprint in it. The second one, after I finally figured out how to change the footprint, is got the schematic. It's attached as a zip file in the email. So I can get you the exact date and time if you need it.
Yeah, I think I did see three of them there. But you figured out how to do it by going into opening the part in the part editor and going to, I think it's configuration. And then there's a field there for the string. You don't put it in as a regular property.
Yeah, no, I never did figure that out in the component editor. I ended up creating all the components again from scratch.
Oh, okay. Because if you go in, instead of just double-clicking outside the component box where you get all the property fields, they treat the reference designator and the PCB footprint and the name as special. So they're not editable in that other, in the normal place where you put the additional user properties. They're under, I think, configuration for the part.
Yeah, I tried. I think I spent a total of 40 hours trying to change the footprint and finally decided it was not editable and gave up.
So how are you trying to edit it?
Oh, I tried to edit the binary file for the component, but it apparently checksums the contents. And so if you alter any bytes inside, the component blows up.
Yeah, that's true. It's protecting itself from users.
Yeah, it's challenging when there's no instruction manual. So at any rate, I finally figured out how to do it all from scratch.
Okay, yeah, it's on a different pull down tab. So that's why it's I don't know why they did it that way. It seems silly, but it's just another property. But it must have some special meaning in their database, so they link it differently or something.
Yeah, that brings up the first of two questions I'd like to ask the group and get their opinion. The first one is, Scotty mentioned that there's a 40 megahertz low pass filter. Currently, I have designed in the receiver a 54 megahertz low pass filter. And the pros and cons of each approach are the 50 megahertz low pass filter will pass 6 meters relatively unattenuated. The cons are that the 40 megahertz filter has got better rejection of the frequencies beyond 6 meters than does the 50 megahertz filter. And I think the 40 megahertz filter would be good in cases where television channel 2, 3, and 4 might be nearby and might be very strong, because it probably would do a better job of taking those out. I'm not sure if there's any of those left in the United States, though. So I'm wondering if folks have an opinion whether they would prefer 6 meter coverage on the receiver or would prefer better out of band rejection beyond 6 meters.
I think, so this is Nathaniel. I think we'd prefer to have the 6 meter capability. Because I think that's where a lot of sporadic E studies would happen.
Well, you don't forego 6 meters. So what happens is you end up with a couple of dB more rejection. It's only about 2 dB rejection, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, at 6 meters. And it goes up to maybe 4 or 5 dB at 60 megahertz if you use the 40 megahertz filter. But the thing is, when you get up past the Nyquist frequency above 61.44, you get a lot more rejection and a lot more roll off. So, and any of those signals that are up in that range, you'll alias. Remember, it folds back around the Nyquist frequency. So, something at 68 megahertz is going to fold right back into the 6 meter band. So, in the Hermes board, they use the 50 megahertz In the IQ2, we used a 40 megahertz, and it seems like it's dangerous to pick one so far down below the 6 meter band, but really it doesn't really roll off that fast. So what you're trading off is a few dB of performance, and mostly, to my opinion, is between 6 meters and 60 megahertz is you're going to get the most hit on performance. But in reality, you're going to get the rejection of the higher frequencies above the Nyquist frequency, and that's what we're going for. So we could build it either way.
Okay, well, based on that discussion, Scotty, I'd go with the 40 megahertz filter then, because I agree with you. I don't think we want to risk having frequencies fold back down.
If it's anything, the AirSpy does not pass 6 meters. It does exactly what you're talking about. It has a low pass at 40 megs and a mixer system option to cover six.
But on 6 meters, do you just get a reduced sensitivity, or is it significant enough to be blocked?
No, their filter cuts it off. I don't know how much, but they don't tout any performance above 40 meg.
Yeah, because I think this filter is only one pole. So, I mean, at between 40 and 54, you really don't get a lot of attenuation.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure of your laydown of your system. I'm not sure how much how much you need to reject the spectrum above your Nyquist rate.
And so, Tom, there's no other low pass filtering besides this in the standard on the board, right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's the only filter that does the roll off. I haven't been able to readily identify strong things above Nyquist that are there to be rejected. If there's channel 2, 3, or 4 television transmitters, those could be significant things that need to be attenuated. At least in the United States, I don't think there are any more TV transmitters there, but there may be in the rest of the world.
What's your sample rate?
Sample rate's 122.88.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much, what kind of environment, these receivers are going to be in. I know I struggle with most SDRs on the market. Even Flex Radio has images, and it drives me nuts. That's why I don't have one in my station here yet. They just don't treat it with respect. But images drive me nuts. When you're looking for weak signals and you turn the knob and it goes the wrong way, you pound your head on the wall and move on. They're annoying.
Well, here's a couple of numbers I can throw out. Unfortunately, the mini circuits page, they give a graph that is about an inch across, so it's really hard to take measurements off of it. And then they give you a table, but the 40 and the 50, they don't give you the insertion loss at the same frequencies for each of them. So it's really hard to compare them. But just to give you an example, at 62 megahertz, the 40 megahertz filter at 62, which is just above our Nyquist frequency, gives you a 10.6 dB rejection. The RL50 at 61 megahertz, which is just below our Nyquist frequency, gives you 5.48 dB. So you get about 6 dB, the 5 dB difference there between the two. Now, if you go back downward at 50 megahertz, the 50 megahertz filter has a 1.4 dB insertion loss, and the 40 megahertz one at 56 megahertz, they don't give you 50 megahertz, 56 megahertz is 2.8 dB. So really, the 40 megahertz filter at 56 megahertz is only attenuating 2.8 dB, and that's above the 6 meter band. So really, even the RLP40 is going to give you a usable 6 meter band. The question here, I think, correct me, Mike or Tom, if I'm wrong, but it's the importance of 54 to 60 megahertz.
Yeah, 54 to 60 is where television channel 2 would be if it's around.
Well, if it's below 60, then it's within our bandwidth. If it's above 60, then it folds back in. So I would be more worried about the ones up above. But again, it's like, this is kind of like a question for Nathaniel is, we're doing ionospheric study on HF. How important is the above 6 meter band? Is that really something you want to focus on, or is if we had some attenuation up there, is that still okay?
Yeah, attenuation up there is just fine.
Okay, well, we can do that. The 3 dB or 2.8 or whatever of the filter, plus a dB or so of other losses, means that to be usable on 6, we'll need a low noise preamp.
But you'd need that even with the RLP50, wouldn't you? Because the RLP50 is still a couple of dB.
Yeah, you would. It wouldn't have to have as much gain, but you know, it's a trade-off. There's probably a difference of 2 dB or 1.8 dB or something between the two filters. So 2 dB is significant in terms of receive sensitivity, but for best performance, you'd need an active low noise amp either case.
Actually, it's 0.76 dB difference at 56 megahertz.
Okay. Well, that may not be too much concern. That brings up the second question, and that has to do with a powered preamp. And right now, the receiver is laid out so that the front end is electrically isolated from the power supply, from the digital ground, from the chassis, all of that. And the purpose for that is to reduce common mode noise, but without suffering the loss of a common mode choke. So it provides a good noise discrimination and a good noise figure without having to use additional chokes. If we put a powered preamp up in the front, then we have to short the ground of the antenna to the power supply ground so that we have a power return lead with which to power the low noise amp. And so there's two approaches here, one of which is I can put shorting clips on the board so that if you just want to use it normally, you leave the ground between the receiver SMA connector and the chassis open, and you leave a power connection open, and then you can plug on a little shorting clip, a little 10th inch shorting clip, to short the ground to the ground and to bridge the power over into the quiet zone of the receiver, and then that would provide power to a future low noise preamplifier plug-on module. The other approach is to build the plug-on module so it's got a third connector and it reaches over into the active part of the circuitry and picks up power and ground as well as connecting to the two connectors. And I think there may be advantages in having the shorting clips. If one, for example, were to use a 5-foot wire into the center of the SMA, but without having the ground connected through, you're probably not going to pick up much because that 5-foot wire requires or relies a lot on the electrical power supply and power cord ground and all of that ground to serve as the other half of the antenna. So some folks may want to short that even if they have no interest in a low noise amp on 6 meters. And so those are two potential approaches to address the issue. Are there folks have comments on that?
Yeah, could we do both, Tom?
Yeah. It's possible to have the two pins for the shorting clip, and then when you plug on the LNA, it just picks up those two pins and does the short for you automatically. But then you could short them independently if you didn't want to plug on the LNA.
Well, I'm thinking that if you could make the plug-on filter board, the one that you've got, relatively short to go between the two isolated grounds. By the way, I like the way you did that. I think it's really useful to have it that way. I think it's going to be a lot less noisy. But you could make a longer board then that would pick up the power, and you could put your LNA more over the active circuitry of the board and still preserve your low noise input. Is that feasible?
Yeah, I think that's one approach, and you know, that will do all of that. I think it may be wise to lay out the connector pins such that when you plug on the LNA, it shorts the two grounds and that brings over the power and does all that stuff. But if you have no interest in 6 meters and you don't plug on the board, that you can instead just plug on a little 2-pin shorting clip to short the two grounds together in case you want to use, you know, just a short wire as an antenna and you don't mind using the power supply and the AC power cord as the other half of the antenna.
Yeah, and that'd be good, except that I'm thinking that couldn't you put the amplifier on the other side of the transformer so that you would never have to connect the ground up and you could still use an LNA in the single-ended portion of the circuit?
Well, the single-ended portion of the circuit is isolated ground, so the single-ended to differential conversion transformer is what bridges the two ground sections and isolates them, or isolates the radio ground from the power supply ground. The preamp has to be preamping in the single-ended. Otherwise, the preamp would need to be a differential low-noise preamp with 200-ohm input and output impedance.
Oh, and that's the one you said basically you have never found one like that? I mean, couldn't you build one?
You could. It's generally a lot easier to get a 50-ohm low-noise amp.
Okay, so I'm just wondering what the trade-off would be then if you were to do the way you suggested then. If you're going to put an LNA on, you'd have to have the jumper on, and otherwise you don't get any power return.
So if you have an LNA, I'd assume we'd build one for 6 meters. And if that's the case, the ground isolation may not be so important that you really care that you bridged it. I don't know if there's a case where you want an HF LNA and isolated ground. That one is a pretty challenging problem to solve.
But typically, wouldn't you be using an LNA like that at the lower frequencies because you have a compromised antenna, you know, like the 5-foot wire?
Yeah, you could. If you have a powered antenna with a receive preamp in it, you can independently power that from the radio system through a bias T, but you'd probably want to decouple the ground return as well as the signal return. The whole purpose for isolating it is to allow a passive, low noise, very good common mode rejection opportunity when if you ground it, that doesn't exist.
So then you're recommending really putting the jumper right at the SMA connector on the board, or is it possible we could just include it in the, say, the input connector? And because you're going to have power on the connectors, right?
Yeah, no, the jumper would be in the middle of the receive board between the FPGA ground plane and the RF ground plane. It would actually not be up at the SMA connector, but it would be about 2/3 of the way down the board, or 1/3 of the way, wherever it is, between the isolated ground planes.
It sounds like we could strategically place it so that you could build a filter board so that it would either include that or not include that, or maybe just move it up to the top level, and you could put the jumper on the top level board. So there's really, you know, you place the board over the input header and the output header and the ground shunt header.
Yeah, yeah. So I was thinking that, you know, an active filter board could short together the ground pins. And if you didn't plug that on, you could leave it open, or you could just plug on one of these, you know, 3-cent shorting clips if for a non-amplified situation, you still wanted to bond the grounds together. So I think there's solutions that will cover at least 3 of the scenarios.
Okay, and then how do you get power? Do we just always route that to the low-pass filter board and then just not use it on the ones that we don't need it?
No. A board that needs it, not only would it reach over to pick up the ground pins, but it would have another contact to also pick up power.
Okay, very good, very good. So, yeah, so you could put a jumper on to connect the grounds together. You could plug the board on, which would connect the grounds together, and then also provide you power if you wanted to put a low-pass filter, an LNA on the board. Or you could have a board that doesn't cover those pins at all, and it could be just your passive board.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You know me, I'm Mr. Options.
Okay, well, that would give you 3 of the options. In the current low-pass filter that I sent you, the last one, it would work in this situation. Okay, so
okay, well,
it sounds like the majority think the 40 megahertz low-pass filter is a good way to go, and I will add the test points on the receiver to allow these bridging and bonding options.
Okay, yeah, I know I've been monopolizing here, but it doesn't seem like we have any downside to putting the jumpers on the extra connections on, right?
Yeah, I don't really see any downsides. The cost of a couple of jumpers is pretty nil.
And you can always leave them off if you don't want to. But really, I mean, like you said, they cost 10 cents. it pales into comparison with what the A to D costs.
Okay, I'll take that note. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Tom.
In the nature of optional components, on the magnetometer, I was wondering if Hjelmen had any feeling. I have not found that there is any temperature correction on the magnetometer suite that we're using. And I wondered if it might not be sensible to put a little inexpensive, or at least put a pad for an inexpensive I2C addressable temperature sensor on the magnetometer board that would be addressable at a different address, but on the same bus as the other things in a future spin of the boards.
That's actually a great idea. Most of the magnetometers have temperature sensor nearby, so they continue to monitor temperature, ambient temperature, and they use the temperature information to recalibrate data set. Especially before we actually put out the sensor in the field, we think that has to be included in one of our test procedures to characterize temperature characterize the behavior of the magnetometer depending on the temperature. That with that information, we can actually post-calibrate the data set after we put the sensor out in the field. So I think that's a great idea. If there's any inexpensive solution out there.
I think there are, depending on the precision you want, but at least to 1 degree Celsius, it's probably a cheap option. To go beyond that, it might be a little pricier, but it wouldn't have to go on the board if it wasn't useful.
I think 1 degree. I don't, you know, for this type of decent performance level measurement, I think 1 degree temperature sensor should be fine. We just have to characterize it before we actually do a field testing. And the other thing that I like to mention is that when we install sensor, I think it's better to have some sort of like insulation so that it doesn't really go through a big temperature gradient. It's not necessarily that we have to insulate the sensor, but it's just after that we just have to make sure that the sensor doesn't go through a sudden change in temperature. So I think the insulation should be pretty inexpensive just by putting some, you know, styrofoam, whatever cheap insulation material around the sensor.
Hey, Dave?
Yes?
That I put the data sheet down there for MCP 9808. It costs 94 cents and it gives you a half a degree resolution, and it's an I2C part.
That sounds like the kind of thing I was looking for. I was just poking around and there's a lot of them, but that sounds kind of like what I had in mind. Half a degree, yeah, and under a dollar. It sounds like it'd be hard to lose.
Yeah, I was planning to actually put one on the data engine, but then I thought better of it, thinking that I have a temperature sensor in the FPGA, so I'm not sure I want to clutter things up with one, but I think, yeah, I think we need one on there eventually.
So where did that data sheet go? I don't see it in the TeamSpeak.
It's on the other tab. There's two tabs at the bottom. It's like the other tab.
Sorry, I put it the wrong tab.
Oh, no problem. Scotty's got it in both now.
I've got it here now. So
yeah, so in 25s, it's 94 cents. So in 100s, it'll be even less. They even have a development board you can buy that has one on it.
I think I've got a development board here. Just have to put a footprint on it.
Yeah, it comes in an MSOP, so it actually has leads instead of contacts. So you might be able to actually be able to solder it.
That's always encouraging.
Yeah, those ones with the pads underneath, you need hot air to do that. Let's see, it looks like it's 0.65 millimeters. That's pretty fine.
That's better than the PCA 9615.
Boy, that thing is pretty accurate, Scotty.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can get for under a buck, huh?
Well, my thought is it doesn't cost us anything for getting to the data either, because we're already talking I squared C, and it, we just, you know, open it and read it and save the value, and we can have a nice calibration curve or something, give it, be to use to massage the data.
Okay, do me a favor and put a jumper on one of the address pins so that we can have one at each end of the line, because we're likely to, since it's such a cheap part, we're likely to just solder it down on the board. So you're likely to have two of these on the same I2C bus, so you're going to need to strap. In fact, you could just hardwire to two different addresses. And the beauty of that is that the local one, even if it doesn't have the magnetometer on it, it's right next to the data engine. So there's my temperature sensor. I don't need to put one on the DE. It'll be there.
Okay, that's a real good suggestion. That gets one at both ends, if one is wanted, and it seems simple to do.
All right, great. Thanks for bringing that up. I think it's a good enhancement.
Yeah.
So when do you get your? Go ahead, Hillman.
I just like to thank you for bringing the issue, because temperature, monitoring temperature is very important. So that's actually a very good point. Thank you.
So when do you get your good boards, Dave? In a couple days?
Well, we don't know they're good yet. I'm still muddling around, but I should get another set of boards in a few days. Hopefully, I'll have something to report next time we talk. I'm already popping. Even the boards I've got are useful in the sense I'm checking, the sizes of things and all, and I don't have the experience you guys have got, so I'm fully prepared to redo these a couple times, but hopefully we'll have something before Christmas.
Hey, here you go. Adafruit has a I2C breakout board that takes the MCP 9808.
I might get one just for comparison's sake.
I don't know. They're $4.95. Awful expensive.
Sounds cheaper to test it than to not.
Yeah, really. By the way, DigiKey stocks those too, so you can order the part. And actually, this comes with the part installed. Now, you can't afford not to buy this.
Great. Well, the so far I've got an all DigiKey bomb on this, and I'm trying to stick to that, just for convenience sake.
Well, I'm impressed. I think they even give you a like an 8-pin header. Yeah, DigiKey has only 704 of them in stock, so you better hurry.
I'll try to get them while they last.
I'll probably give you a nickel off for Black Friday sale.
Not DigiKey.
Well, we've run out of gas and we're not out of time yet. So Ned, are you going to be at the HamFest this weekend?
Yeah, I should be. Normally, this weekend I'm busy in the CQ160 contest, but not going to be operating this weekend because of the network problem. So I'll actually probably be awake and sociable at the HamFest.
Yes, it'll be coherent, unlike the 160. I remember years past operating that contest, and you know, about the time the band closes for the morning, you waddle off and are bleary-eyed for the whole HamFest because you've been up all night.
Yeah, this time I'll be fresh and ready to hit it hard.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring down the SDR demo and with the IQ2 and the Vim board and set that up at the HamFest, see if I can impress anyone with this small size.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll take a look. Yeah, I got family just showed up. I got to check out. See y'all later. Thank you.
73, Ned. So, Dave, KV0S, what's going on with programming?
Oh, not that much. I, as you know, I'm in the process of retiring, so I'm fishing out a bunch of my older code projects and cleaning them up and packaging them, which seems silly at the end of your career, but that's something I want to do, to just have a clean set. And the nice thing is, I don't have to think too hard about what the program's doing, because I have that all well done. It's just spending a little time with updated code. I wrote most of this code 20, 30 years ago.
Ah, that's what comments are for.
Yeah, but this is old C code, and the comments are pretty scarce.
Well, you wrote it, right? So you can blame the author.
Yeah, but 30 years of in my brain, some of the details have disappeared.
Oh, no. Well, it'll come back to you.
Oh, yes. That's the fun part, because it's like rediscovering things that I did before. I have some other ideas, but that are radio related, but I'm in the process of getting all the little detail pieces in line to make that easier. So making sure I can do the graphing that I want to do, and basically do the graphing in a web browser. So trying to get that all set up with a tool that I like. I tend to be preferential to SVG because it looks so nice, but Dave keeps reminding me there are other solutions too. But I'll get there. It's just one step at a time. I did do a little bit. I loaded up and compiled from scratch the GNU radio, and I got a couple of errors on a Polar library, but otherwise it seems to work. And I was going to ask Tom about that. I don't know how often he compiles GNU radio from scratch, but Tom, do you have any comment?
Yeah, the Polar, other folks have had that same problem. I think that was done as a student project a couple of years ago and hasn't been maintained. And I think it's a version, it's a library version issue. I compile it from scratch, and I don't have that problem. I don't think I use the Polar library.
Oh, okay. Well, and so I was going to go through some of your code and some other things just as a refamiliarization for myself, and that's sort of my task. But a lot of that, I don't really need to write code myself to do those things, so I wanted to have some projects where I was writing code. So the two languages I've been spending the most time with are the Go, or as many people know it, Golang, and some JavaScript, so that I can use web browsers as an interface. So is that more than you wanted to know, Scotty?
Yeah. No, that's good. I'm glad to see you're getting back into old stuff and having some fun. I've been trying to clean off my shop here, clean out my shop, and some of the stuff has been piled up. This is embarrassing. It's been piled up for 15 years in my workshop area. So it's like Christmas time. You go through the pile and you say, oh, look at that. Isn't that cool? I didn't know I had that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've got to, in the next year or two, clean out my office. And that's another 30-year collection.
Oh, yes. It's fun if you have the time to do it. And by the way, I want to correct myself. Earlier, I misspoke about the SDR Play being on sale. It's the AirSpy that's on sale, 30% off. So the HF Discovery goes from 169 to 118. The HF Plus Dual goes from 199 to 139. And the Mini and the R2 and the Spyver or the other radios, they're also discounted. I'll post the link down below.
Well, that's useful. By the way, Scotty, the kind of program that I had written and I'm rewriting is a spatially explicit forest growth model. So the graphics are about as detailed as graphing signals.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like a waterfall for the forest?
Yeah, except they're it's three-dimensional, and it's objects in three-dimensional space, and then they all have characteristics. The objects themselves are polar coordinates, but they're placed in a plane in Cartesian coordinates.
Well, so is it like a 3D looking model? You're trying to, you know, I've seen those graphs that they do that look like a 3D surface, but they're printed on paper.
Yes. Although I don't, I actually like slices better than having a blob with a, because a lot of the stuff in the back of the blob get obscured. Do you know what I just said or not?
Yeah. I get it. But you got to have a little more, how can I say this, visual ability when you start talking about slices.
Yeah, the slices give you a very clear picture at one place in the space, but you need to be able to find the slices quickly and then draw them quickly. And so looking for ways of doing those kinds of things. And all this stuff, while it's about forestry, it's about programming in general. You can apply the same tools to different problems very easily.
No, that sounds good. And oh yeah, that reminds me of another thing. Nathaniel was wanting to be able to put something up on the web page, kind of explaining more about the Tangerine and the Personal Space Weather Station, or the HAMSI project, and kind of acknowledge the NSF. So I was looking at the webpage, Nathaniel, and I was trying to figure out how we would do that, and I'm not sure I can figure out something that would look clean and simple.
Can you just write a paragraph or two?
Yeah, and then we could put them on the bottom there, or how would we do it?
Yeah, I was thinking, I wrote a couple sample paragraphs in that email. I just thought you would add those to the bottom or the middle or something, so that when people come to the page, they understand that the Tangerine SDR is really also the project that is the heart of the Personal Space Weather Station development right now.
Yeah, so do you have can you send me, or Dave, I guess, needs it, the I'm volunteering you here, Dave, to the National Science Foundation logo. Do you have a copy of that? And we don't really have a logo for the Personal Space Weather Station, do we?
No, we should really get one, but I can definitely get you the National Science Foundation logo. I mean, really, I just pulled that off of Google Images. I find the highest resolution version I can, and I use that one.
Well, and basically, we just need to clearly link what is the role of that, and then put it in the space, the web space, the web page space, because we want to attribute everything that's relevant and try to give people an appropriate idea of the connections.
That's right, exactly.
Well, I noticed we got the Tapper and HAMSI at the top. Now, since this is a Tapper project, the Tapper really belongs up there. But it seems to me we could, at the bottom, maybe below the orange line, and put another orange line in there with the copyright below that, or your ID there, and put the HAMSI logo with a little paragraph there explaining how we're linked to them, the NSF, and how we're linked to them. And, you know, maybe get a couple other, like the Sarah guys or the Jove guys, to contribute their thing. So we have a kind of a little use case panel at the bottom.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Or what if you put a paragraph right in between the sentence that says, if you're looking for a typical SDR, and the in addition to this website, no. You have right at the top, you have the Tangerine SDR is a modular software-defined radio project with the following objectives, and you list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then put the paragraph right there that links it back and explains it.
Okay, because I'd like to include some additional use cases, but we make sure that the PSWS and the NSF are listed first as the inspiration and the primary use case. And by the way, I just got the text for my column. It's coming out in January, February of 2020, next month. And I outlined the history and how the project came about and all that, with links to HAMSI and everything in the article. So that should be very obvious how we're hooked up together.
That sounds good.
Yeah, and I like annotations. So I have all the URLs for HAMSI and you know, everything's all in there and under the footnotes so people can find things.
Well, there's no problem doing this, and I'll probably notify Scotty and Nathan when I get something up so that you can critique it, and it can be changed before if I wrote it in a incorrect way. Like Nathan, I have one more class and then just a lot of grading for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so can you put up an alternate page, you know, tangerinestr.com/test, and then we can play around with that?
Yes, I can do that.
Yeah, because I think your wording was good, Nathaniel. And, you know, so just like I said, I'd like to see some other use cases get mentioned, but I want to make sure that PSWS is the first one, because we want to definitely thank the NSF for doing what they did. Does that help you when we... Will you publicize it like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of times I've been getting a lot of emails recently from people saying, okay, congratulations on the grant. This is great. How do I get involved? And then I need to go explain to them, okay, you should go join this listserv and this one over here. And so if we just make the connection look a little bit stronger, I think it will make a little bit more sense to people. So Dave, I just sent you the email that I had sent Scotty. So it has that text in there so you can see what I originally wrote, and we can try and tweak it.
Okay. Well, this week I should probably have some time, so I'll get on it in the next day or two.
Thanks. And yeah, I wish I do not have just one class left. I have a couple classes that I still have to prepare for, and I'm going to be working on finals right to the last minute. And next week I'm running off to San Francisco, and I'm having people proctor my final exams while I'm out there, and I'm having people give presentations for me out there since I can't get there before my classes are over. So everything is just like absolutely craziness for me right now.
Well, our last class day is Thursday this week.
Ah, you're lucky. Our last one is Monday. So the meeting in San Francisco starts on Saturday or Sunday, actually, but I'm not going to be leaving until Tuesday.
Oh, well, that makes it complicated.
Yeah, so most of my presentations are on Friday, so I will make most of the meeting. But there is one that Hyomin just reminded me of that he's going to be presenting for me on, I think it's on Saturday, so I need to get him some slides.
I know how that is.
Yes, it's a very exciting. And my wife, Rachel, is also, she's presenting a poster there. And then we're also going to be traveling with Anthony. So this will be our first time flying with a 10-month-old. So it'll be very exciting.
Oh, yes. At least it's not that far. My son brought a 10-month-old from China to the U.S. and back. And that was quite an adventure for them.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Well, you can't do anything easier. You know, if it was easy, anyone could do it.
I guess it's true.
So are the, I was going to ask you about the conference airline reservations. Is that going to be a while before they get to that? Do you want me to go ahead and make mine, or should I still be waiting?
Let's see. I guess it depends. If you want to go ahead and make it, you can make those reservations. But then we will have to go through the whole reimbursement process similar to how we did it with NJIT. So it's just going to, but on the other hand, then you know you'll have your ticket in hand and everything's all set to go.
Well, I'm just looking for the fact that the ticket's going to be a lot cheaper if I can get that that one there, because it's like $200 off the next best ticket. So I'm afraid if I wait too long, it'll be gone.
Well, let's see if we can get it. Let's see if we can get the university to book it this week. There's a possibility of that. The university was shut down today for the snow, but I know they're trying to get all of this stuff worked out. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, and I sent you the flight info, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if it comes down to it and they can't do it, then I can do it. That's no problem. I'm just trying to save as much money as possible.
Yes, that sounds very good.